I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. No Tuesday turnaround in sight. Stocks positioned to continue their slide after kicking off the new quarter in the red. Right now, futures are lower. That slide being fueled in part by stronger than expected economic data, reducing hopes of a Fed rate cut soon. We will tell you when traders are now expecting the Fed to act. Disney locking in critical support as its boardroom battle with Nelson Peltz marches closer to its conclusion. A look at who's getting behind Bob Iger and company. Shares of Donald Trump's social media company falling again after getting crushed yesterday. The staggering stat on how much in value the former president lost in the wipeout. In our week-long look at some of the best ideas for Q2 and beyond, the Magnificent Seven member, our next guest says, will keep delivering returns to shareholders. It is Tuesday, April the 2nd, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After a mixed start to the trading week, the Dow and the S&P posting their first negative session in the last three. Taking a look at futures right now. Here's the thing that we're really looking at right now in the early trade. It's the Dow. It looks like it would open 170 points lower. We'll continue to watch that throughout the morning. We're also checking the bond market. Yields yesterday get a bit of a pop on the back of Friday's PCE report and manufacturing data. Take a look at the benchmark right now. Yield 4.32%. This is more than 10 basis points higher than the level that we saw yesterday in the pre-market. Another thing we'll watch and be talking about during our market discussions. And we are also checking oil around fresh Mideast tensions. We talked a lot about oil yesterday with RBC's Halima Croft. Israel carrying out a strike on Iran's consulate in Syria, killing two generals and five others. That's increasing concerns that that conflict could expand and impact oil supplies. Take a look right here. We're seeing WTI. It just hit just a short time ago. It hit $85 a barrel for the first time since October. You see it's fallen back just a few cents from that level right now, but still up almost 1.5%. Brent crude trading at basically $88.60 right now, up almost 1.5% as well. We also want to get a check on gold after touching a fresh record high of $22.64 yesterday. Right now you can see it looks like it's going to hit another fresh record high again today. Gold up more than 1%. Big ramp up you see in recent days. Year to date, up double digits. Okay, that is your morning setup. We now want to see how Europe is shaping up as it kicks off its second quarter. Erbile Gumede is in our London newsroom with much more on the early action. Erbile, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Frank. How's it going? Well, it was a positive day to start out in Europe, actually, but pared down a lot of those gains then across the board. So you're actually seeing a bit of a mixed picture then. Down goes the Spanish market, nearly 0.2% weaker, in fact. But the FTSE market out of the UK actually is the big gainer today, 0.25% higher. It was a little bit more than that. And that's on the back of that oil price that you've just been noting, then significantly higher on $88 a barrel there. That's meant the likes of BP and Shell, of course, have moved higher. So that's picked up this European trade, of course, across the Stock 600. We had seen record numbers as well just last week, even out of the DAX as well as the German market. I'm speaking about Shell as well as BP. Well, that means oil and gas sectors shares are rather going up, right? So let's take a look at those sectors and see what exactly is moving things along. Like I made note of, oil and gas at the top of the Stock 600, then 0.25% higher, 2% gain as well for basic resources. That means Glencore, Anglo American, all of those managing to move a little bit higher, Frank. So that's the picture right now out of Europe.
That's the picture right now out of Europe in Erbile. Guess what? I'm going to see you in person next week, starting on Monday. Worldwide Exchange is heading over to London. You and I will be able to kind of talk back and forth about the markets and everything else. We keep our bromance going. We can wear the same color suit on Friday, even if we want to. I'm looking forward to seeing you and the rest of the team over there.
Sounds like a plan. Let's look forward to it.
Yeah, whole thing starts at 5 a.m. on Monday. For the audience, we didn't tell you yesterday. We didn't want you to think it was an April Fool's joke. But Worldwide Exchange in London starting this upcoming Monday, it's real. We're excited about it. Okay, we're going to turn our attention back to the markets here in the U.S. and dimming expectations of a rate cut in June on the back of better-than-expected manufacturing data. According to the CME FedWatch tool, traders now looking at a 58% chance the Fed cuts rates at its June meeting, with those odds briefly dipping below 50% yesterday. That figure stood at 63% just a week ago. For much more, let's bring in Ross Mayfield, investment strategy analyst for Baird. Ross, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So saw a bit of a pullback in the markets yesterday. We saw yields rise as well. That's obviously part of that whole dynamic there. In your mind, how much of the rally that we saw in Q1, how much is it dependent on the idea that we are getting those Fed rate cuts, that we're getting possibly as many as three, and that they're coming sooner than later?
I think it's a big part of the rally, right? I think the market's resilience in the face of taking 3 to 4 rate cuts out of the forecast, which we did in Q1, the market entered the year looking for 6 to 7. To pare it down to 3 and still have a 10% plus gain and see the breadth and momentum continue, I think is a typical of the resilience here. But you do need to continue to at least see a dovish tilt from the Fed. That is a hint towards rate cuts rather than holding firm all year or looking for even rate hikes later in the year. If, manufacturing activity, economic activity reaccelerates or inflation just proves too sticky to get down to that 2% target. So I think it's important.
All right. So that manufacturing data and PC from Friday had a big impact on the markets yesterday. You're looking ahead, actually, at jobs data, both the JOLTS and, of course, the monthly jobs report. In your mind, what do those mean for the market and for some of the rally that we've seen and also some of the broadening that we've seen in the market?
Well, I think it means everything, right? The Fed has a dual mandate. They've focused on inflation, entirely over the past couple of years, but they can't ignore the job market. And I think they will get a lot more dovish at even a hint or a whiff of weakness in the labor market. We've seen some cracks, some normalization back to pre-COVID trends. In the JOLTS report, we look at the quits rate. Initial claims are still quite low, but I think even a hint of weakness in the job market will shift this narrative from a hawkish Fed to a more dovish Fed pretty quickly, because they're watching that dual mandate closely and because the consumer spending story has been very much predicated on a solid job market. If that gives way even a little bit, I think you'll see this shift in markets towards more of a dovish tilt and that soft landing talk, get a little quaky. Now, markets will like it if yields pull back, but at the same time, you need the job market to support the economic activity we've seen.
All right. So, we're getting some, we received some mixed information when it came to that manufacturing data and also PCE. You say we're also looking ahead to jobs. In your mind, just in general, what's the sentiment of the market right now? As we look ahead to Q2, what are you seeing in the market right now? Are we still seeing the same bullishness? Are we starting to see some cautious optimism? What's your view?
Bullish, but not euphoric, right? So it's not 2021. We're not seeing, you're seeing a little bit of IPO activity pick up. You're seeing some risk on sentiment. And things are bullish, right? The survey data is bullish. The options positioning data is pretty bullish, but not euphoric, not over the top. The kind of thing where you need bull market or bulls to kind of propel a bull market. And I think we're in that phase. Now, could we see a kind of tidy consolidation period here? And are we seeing that right now? I think it's possible. The market needs a reason to sell off every now and then. But I would say bullish, not euphoric, is where we sit today. And that's just fine for where we're at in the bull market.
All right, Ross Mayfield, good to see you as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, time now for a check on this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good Tuesday morning to you. Walt Disney gaining some critical support in its proxy fight with Nelson Peltz ahead of tomorrow's shareholder meeting. A spokesperson for T. Rowe Price telling CNBC it will vote for Disney management, saying it's comfortable with supporting that team and its plans for the company. Meanwhile, BlackRock, which is Disney's second largest shareholder, also reportedly planning to back the company ahead of today's deadline to vote, and shares of Disney are just slightly lower in the pre-market. Meanwhile, Citigroup reportedly carrying out a fresh round of job cuts. According to Bloomberg, filings with regulators showed plans to cut 430 positions, with the report adding the cuts were focused in the bank's tech, media, and telecom units, among others. The cuts coming as Citi concluded what it called the major actions of its massive reorganization plan. And we're watching shares of health insurers this morning getting hit after the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services finalized the 2025 rate announcement for Medicare Advantage and prescription drug coverage. This final rate of 3.7% is unchanged from January's proposed rate, disappointing analysts who had expected between 50 and 100 basis points of improvement, Frank.
Yeah, seeing a big impact there. Humana shares down more than 9% right now. Silvana, thank you very much.
You got it, Frank.
All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including one financial advisor's best picks for the second quarter. But first, a Trump slump. Shares of the former president's media company, They're set to get hit again today after getting clobbered in yesterday's session. Plus, AT&T, the latest major company to reveal a massive data breach, where our next guest says the rising number of breaches, they may be falling on deaf ears. And then later, the Bears getting in the driver's seat for Tesla. Just how much money they've made on the EV makers' troubles. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your big money movers. That's three stock stories in the morning. We start with shares of PVH. They are tumbling after the maker of Tommy Hilfiger and the Calvin Klein brands forecast a bigger than expected drop in sales this year. You can see their shares are down almost 25%. The company is citing a tougher macroeconomic backdrop for shoppers and a challenging climate in Europe. PVH gets roughly two-thirds of its sales from outside of the United States. Shares of Trump Media, they are down again today after falling 21% yesterday. The parent company of Truth Social revealing it lost $58 million last year on just about $4 million in revenue. Trump Media completed its SPAC merger last week. The value of the former president's stake, it's dropped from about $4.9 billion to roughly $3.8 billion as of yesterday's close. You can see those shares are down more than 4% right now. And Xiaomi surging as much as 16% in Hong Kong today, the first day of trading since the Chinese electronics maker launched its first electric vehicle last week. The SU7, short for Speed Ultra 7, cost under $30,000 for the base model, less than Tesla's Model 3. Xiaomi says it received nearly 89,000 pre-orders in the first 24 hours of sales, but it also expects to lose money on that vehicle. You can see shares of Xiaomi right now. They're up just about 9%. All right, turning to a big news story from yesterday, AT&T is still dealing with the fallout from a data breach it disclosed over the weekend. The company revealing personal information for more than 72 million current and former customers. That included names, passcodes, and social security numbers. They were posted on the dark web last month. Shares United Health also down 10% since a cyber attack at its Change Healthcare unit in February, disrupting pharmacies and medical claims all around the U.S. Organizations are spending more money every year on cybersecurity, but hackers, they always seem to stay at least a step ahead. The Identity Theft Resource Center says the number of reported data breaches rose nearly 80% last year to a record high. Let's get more insight now from Hugh Thompson, managing partner of Crosspoint Capital and program committee chair of the RSA Conference, the largest gathering of IT security professionals in the United States. Hugh, good morning. Great to have you on the show.
Hi, Frank. Good morning. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this AT&T breach, we just mentioned millions and millions of people. It numbers-wise is the largest since these new SEC regulations about reporting hacks took effect back in December. Put this in perspective. Is this a sign that the rules are working, that we're getting this kind of information? How would you view this disclosure by AT&T?
This is definitely a significant breach. And what we've seen over the past few months is a string of massive cyber attacks. You mentioned another one a few minutes ago where folks aren't able to actually get their prescriptions. These attacks are having profound implications on society. They're affecting everyday people in their everyday life activities.
So I want to talk to you about the stock impact. I know that's not necessarily your wheelhouse, but I do want to talk to you about it. So AT&T stock after disclosing closed just over 0.5% lower yesterday. So not a huge drop. We've seen other companies have a deeper impact after a hack. I'm thinking a company like an Okta, also Caesars, Clorox as well. They had a deeper impact. How often do these hacks, how much, I should say, do they impact the stock price? How much do they impact consumer confidence historically?
The impact on the consumer is pretty interesting. Think about the first time you got one of these letters in the mail that says your data was compromised and an attacker has it. It was alarming. Then you got a second one from somewhere else. It was concerning. By the time you get to the 10th or 11th of these letters, and many people have gotten that many, you start to get a little desensitized to it. And it just speaks to how frequent and how constant the barrage is from cyber attackers today.
All right, so it's something that we've seen very often. Surprised that we didn't see a deeper stock impact?
You know, I think we're in the early stages of some of these investigations.
Okay.
You know, often, if you've got a report in 4 days, it's like reading the first three pages of the first chapter of a book, and then your book report's due. right? It's very, very difficult to know the full extent of things in a very short period of time. I think we're going to find out more.
Hugh, natural segue here. Full extent of things, artificial intelligence. Give us a sense in your mind. Yeah. You're someone with a lot of expertise. How does artificial intelligence impact cybersecurity and some of these corporate hacks that we're seeing?
It's a double-edged sword. You know, on the one hand, I think there's great promise to help cyber defenders to be able to analyze data from multiple places and coordinate controls. But on the other side, attackers are using these technologies today. And so you see the benefit to a defender, but for an attacker, it's really a question of scale. Can I use it to attack more people more efficiently with the data that they have? And so we will see in the coming weeks and months.
All right, Hugh Thompson, great to see you. Thank you for your time and for your insight. Have a good day. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we're laying out the new housing landscape, why it may be even harder for would-be home buyers to get in the already hot spring market. We'll have that story and much more when Worldwide Exchange returns. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. We start with UBS downgrading its rating on Blackstone, moving it to neutral. It mainly cites lower estimates and expectations for a prolonged recovery on several factors for that move. JMP initiating coverage of Grindr with an outperform rating and a $14 price target. It says it expects the dating app's position to strengthen as it converts users to paid accounts. One stock under the microscope this week, I should say, is Tesla. The EV maker set to report first quarter deliveries. Ahead of that figure, analysts rapidly lowering their expectations, with some even suggesting Tesla could face its first sales decline since the early days of the pandemic. The sour outlook coming as Tesla faced a tough first quarter, with the stock plunging 29%, its worst performance since the end of 2022, and its third worst quarterly performance on record. But for those betting against the company, not really a terrible start to the year at all. A recent CNBC article highlighting data from S3 Partners that Tesla shorts, they're up nearly $5.8 billion this year. That makes it the most profitable name in the U.S. when it comes to that short interest trade. Let's dig deeper into Tesla with Michelle Schneider, chief strategist at MarketGauge.com. Michelle, good morning. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
So I guess we got to touch on this whole short trade, the most profitable short here in the U.S. Today, we're expecting those delivery numbers. In your mind, does Tesla meet those numbers? Does it exceed? Does the possibility of it missing just extend the viability of that short interest trade?
Well, when you're talking about a company like Tesla and actually the whole EV space, there's a lot of dots to connect. So we want to make sure that we connect the right dots. So looking at Tesla alone, obviously we've seen a fall from grace for a lot of different reasons, some of which have hit the entire EV mega trend, which was very, very hot for a long time as we got through mass adoption. And then reality set in, reality of infrastructure issues, reality of the fact that sometimes you cannot even charge a car if you have a blackout or something like that. The fact is that there has been a tremendous amount of competition. Mm-hmm. Also, that they've sat on used cars lots without being able to resell. Hertz stopped selling them completely, or I should say leasing them. So when you put all of that together, the space in and of itself was under stress. But Tesla is still the pinnacle, right?
So wait, so it sounds like you're focused on a number of fundamental issues. I think one of the other ones we have to bring up, you mentioned competition very briefly, but there's growing competition from Chinese EV makers. So in your mind, when it comes to the long-term story of Tesla, at least also the short term, we're obviously talking about the performance in Q1. How big of a factor is that in the decline?
Well, it's definitely a huge factor, and China keeps coming out with there was a release this morning of another car that was a phone maker that came out with an EV in China, and they just set records in terms of orders. Right. So that's going to keep happening in the whole space, even here in the United States. But Tesla is a $170 stock versus a Rivian, if we're looking at the U.S., that's an $11 stock. So what we have to look for Tesla is what would make that shine again, given the stress of the EV space, where hybrids, for example, have done much better. So I think with Tesla, it's not going to be so much the supply demand and the number that comes out today. Deliveries are important, but it's one factor. So we're really looking at what is the future and what are the strengths of Tesla. So software, performance of cars, name recognition. These are the things where it shines.
You're looking at a number of fundamentals. We even had a guest on last week that said the storage business is also another bright spot. And really, that's one of the things that he sees justifying the very lofty valuation of a Tesla. I want to get to your technical thesis as well. So right now, Tesla is moving under its 50-day moving average. But over the last couple of days, trending just very slightly higher. You say 180 on the shares. That's a key level.
I would say for a short-term pop, given the short float, if it got through 180, you might see people starting to jump in. Certainly, we know Cathie Wood keeps buying all the dips. And that could bring it back up to 200 or even 215. But generally, just going back, and the reason why I'm making the fundamental case is because I think the technicals will be impacted by that. Until there's some such innovation, and I think probably self-driving cars would be the biggest that Tesla would certainly dominate, we can see the stock easily break down from here, go to 150, and if it can't hold there, maybe down to 110, and that I think is when you're going to start to see some real value.
All right, Michelle, we got to leave the conversation there. Right now, Tesla trading at about 172. Thank you very much for your time and insight. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, a pair of spinoffs from GE and 3M making their trading debut this week. What history has to say about those stocks and how they may perform in the long run. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour at the check of U.S. stock futures. After a mixed start to this trading week, taking a look at futures, you can see in the red across the board, we're focusing on the Dow right now. Looks like it would open just about 150 points lower. We're also looking at the Dow's pre-market laggards right now. Taking a look, United Health right there at the top of the list. We just talked about some of the impact to healthcare providers just a bit earlier in the show. Those shares down more than 4%, followed by Walt Disney. Very critical week for Walt Disney, of course. Shares down just over a quarter of a percent. And then Goldman Sachs there in the number three spot. We also want to take a look at the bond market. Yields getting a pop yesterday on the back of Friday's PCE report and also manufacturing data. Take a look at the benchmark. We've seen the benchmark, the yield there rise about 10 basis points from the level that we saw it at yesterday. We'll continue to talk about that and watch that throughout the show. We're also checking oil around fresh Mideast tensions. Israel carrying out a strike on Iran's consulate in Syria, killing two generals and five others. That's just increasing concerns that the conflict could expand and impact oil supplies. WTI, the U.S. benchmark, hitting $85 for the first time since October. Right now, you see it trading at $85.21 a barrel, hitting it. It looks like its highs of the morning. Brent crude right now trading just a tick below $88.90 a barrel, also hitting its highs of the morning. We'll continue to look at the oil prices throughout the morning if we continue to see upside moves. We also want to get a check on gold after touching a fresh record of $22.64 yesterday. Right now, you see it at $22.85. More up more than 1%, looking like it's on pace for another fresh record high today. You can see gold year to date up more than 10%. All right, we're going to stick with the markets and our week-long look at the second quarter, tapping into some of the brightest minds in the markets to find opportunity, getting their best stock picks for the rest of the year, and just a few under-the-radar plays. G-Square Private Wealth's Victoria Green helping to kick off things yesterday, naming Quanta Services as her top pick and Devon Energy as her under-the-radar play. Now we're going to get some Q2 picks from Malcolm Etheridge. He's the executive vice president of CIC Wealth and a CNBC contributor. Malcolm, good morning. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Frank. Good morning.
All right, so let's get into your pick. Your pick is Amazon, but it's not based on their cloud computing business or their e-commerce business where they're market leaders. You're more focused on their ad business that only generates under 10% of revenue. Why?
Yeah, that's a fair way to tee it up. And I think that's what makes Amazon so attractive. We're focused primarily on the fact that Amazon Web Services kind of carries the water for the entire company. But I think what's buried under the surface there is that over the last 5 years, since 2019, digital advertising has returned them something like 37% revenue growth year over year, whereas AWS has only been about 27%. And so with margins estimated to be about 50% for both units, I think we should be paying a little bit more attention to the digital ad side of this business.
All right, so you're paying attention to the digital ad side of it. By the way, shares pretty much doubling the S&P year to date, trades at 4 to 3 times. I know you don't always focus that much on valuation, but just something I want to mention to the audience. You're focused on the ad business, but so are regulators in the EU. A lot of regulation risk from the Digital Markets Act. Also, Amazon last week losing a court battle specifically related to its online ad business. The judge said, after ruling against Amazon, saying it could cause some serious and irreparable harm to that business. How concerned are you about regulation?
I'm not super concerned about regulation simply because Amazon's not the biggest player in the space. And so I think they will go after them sort of as a basket. I think that it will make some impact as far as Amazon is concerned globally. They're number three behind Facebook and Google globally, but they're also gaining share here in the U.S., which I think is really important. And so it's unlikely that our Justice Department is going to go after Amazon anytime soon as far as their ad sales are concerned. And that's where a significant portion of that ad buying is happening.
All right. So you do have your eye on the regulation. I want to go to your under the radar pick. That's Fortinet. That's a cybersecurity player. You always are very focused on cybersecurity when you come on the show. So you're being consistent, but I do want to talk to you. Shares of Fortinet down more than 1% since Palo Alto reported its earnings. Palo Alto saying it's shifting towards platformization. You say Fortinet actually made that news a couple months ago, and it's set to benefit from that change now?
Yeah, I think the call from Palo Alto to focus more on platformization actually retroactively helps Fortinet's announcement in November that they wanted to shift the focus to going from on-premise to the cloud. They got whacked for that back then when they made the statement, but now that Palo Alto has made it clear that that's the only way to survive, I think what it did was help Fortinet become an attractive buying opportunity for a larger company, with Fortinet doing something like, what, $5 billion or so. I think it helps to bring them into the ecosystem of someone like an Alphabet slash Google, for example, where they already have a working relationship to get access to their 180 or so points of presence. And so Fortinet suddenly becomes the way for anybody who needs that hardware set to get that business sooner than having to go and try and build it, because the hardware side of this business is way too complicated.
So it sounds like you thought the whole platformization thing was already priced into the stock, but it's still negative since Palo Alto made that announcement, the whole sector under pressure. So you see that either turning around or the company being bought, and that's where investors can make money.
That's what makes this so under the radar. I think that the cybersecurity space hasn't been getting the respect that it deserves to this point. No surprise to anybody who's seen me on your show before. But I also believe that as we start to really take cybersecurity seriously and see it for what it is, it's a necessary business unit in the tech stack. It's not a discretionary business unit whatsoever. And I think Fortinet is one of those companies that flies so far under the radar. There's lots of opportunities for investors who want to move into that name today. I'm actually watching it myself to see where the most attractive entry point is.
All right, Malcolm Etheridge, your picks, Amazon and Fortinet. Great to see you as always. Tomorrow, we got Stephanie Link coming in. She's going to lay out her top picks as well as her under the radar play. All right, switching gears over to housing. The spring housing market is coming in hot, making it harder not just for new buyers, but for move-up buyers to afford a home. Our Diana Lowell joins us now with some stunning numbers on what it takes to get into this red-hot housing market. Diana, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Yeah, home prices in February were 5.5% higher than they were in February of last year. And that annual comparison is shrinking slightly. But the price gain from January to February was actually nearly twice what it is normally at that time, suggesting this spring's market started out strong despite another rebound in mortgage rates, and that data all according to CoreLogic. Now, the real trouble in today's market is a lack of supply. There are more new listings now than last spring, but supply is still 40% below where it usually is. We are still seeing that lock-in effect of current homeowners who won't sell because the cost of moving up is just so high. Well, how high? Well, we got more numbers from ICE Mortgage Technology, which paints a pricey picture. Take a look. For perspective, in the 22 years before the Fed started raising rates, for the average homeowner upgrading to a 25% more expensive home, it would have increased their monthly payment of principal and interest by 40%, or about $400. Moving to a similar home across the street wouldn't change the payment at all. But fast forward to buyers today who have rates near record lows. Trading up to a 25% more expensive home would result in a 132% increase in that monthly payment, or about $1,800 more. And they would have to increase their monthly payment by 60% just to buy their own home in the current market. This is an average for the nation, so it will vary market to market depending on how pricey the market is and how much more it costs to move up to a bigger home. Interesting, though, more borrowers in pricier markets have rock-bottom rates because the break-even point on the cost of a refi is typically lower for higher balance borrowers, so they would have refied more often. Frank?
Yeah, you know, we talked a lot about it this on Worldwide Exchange, Diana. Like 60% of people have a mortgage under 4%. If you have it under 4%, it's pretty hard to move. But I do want to ask you, cash buyers, another big part of the market, how are they playing into all this?
Well, that's one way of getting around this, right, is to use cash. Not only does it make you more competitive, but you don't get that mortgage rate effect. So for sellers who have the cash to do it and buying into a new home, they don't have to worry about that higher rate. But for the lower, you know, income borrowers who might be moving up from that starter home and need a mortgage to get into that next level home, they're still going to need a mortgage. And even if they can get the cash up front, a lot of them are doing it with cash first to be competitive and then taking out a mortgage. And that doesn't help with that mortgage effect of how much more it's going to cost. And that's why you don't see any starter homes on the market, because people in starter homes have the hardest time moving up to that next level home.
All right, Diana Olick with the very latest on the spring home buying season. Diana, always great to see you. Thank you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, a rough start for 3M's spinoff of its healthcare unit. What that may signal about the company's ability to perform moving forward, we'll have that and much more when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We've been talking a lot about cybersecurity on the show today. We're going to add one more name to the list. That's Rubrik. It's a cyber platform backed by Microsoft. It's filed for an IPO. The move adds to the growing wave of companies turning to the capital markets after a two-year lull. Rubrik, which was founded back in 2014, makes ransomware protection and data backup software for more than 6,000 customers, including NVIDIA and Home Depot. It was valued at $4 billion after an investment by Microsoft back in 2021. Well, General Electric, it is slimming down. The one-time industrial giant and maker of just about everything, from turbines to light bulbs, is now spinning off its power generation business, GE Vernova. Common shares, they start trading today. The remaining company will now be called GE Aerospace. Vernova's when-issued shares, they've been trading higher ahead of the spinoff. We're also looking at 3M. 3M completed the spinoff of its healthcare business, Solventum, yesterday. Shares whipsawing between losses and gains on their first day of trading. Analysts say some spinoffs, they can be a good buying opportunity for investors. Jim Ossman is the founder of Edge Consulting Group, which analyzes spinoffs in special situations such as buybacks and stock offerings. Jim, good morning. Great to have you here.
Frank, good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right, so we're doing a little conversation here about spinoffs. I want to go back to the first one that we talked about, Vernova. As we mentioned, the shares, they've been moving higher, the tracking shares, I should say. Is that a good indicator of a buying opportunity? I know you say sometimes these spinoffs are a good opportunity, sometimes they're not.
So it's a great question. So you've got to look where you come from, Frank. The whole premise of GE was on its knees when Larry Culp took over. Now, Larry Culp has transformed GE. His idea joining in 2018, later in 2021, was to break the whole industry or whole company into three parts. So he started off by spinning off GEHC, which was the healthcare part. And this is the final piece in the puzzle where he spins off Vernova, which is the power, wind and electrification arm of the business. So you have these three pieces. So the once giant is now in three. Now, investors will get four shares of, for every four shares they own, they get one share of Vernova today on their
portfolio. They get one because if you're a GE shareholder.
Exactly.
I want to just get to the main question there.
Yeah.
We talked about the tracking shares. You can kind of see where the stock's going before it officially debuts. Is that a good indicator? If you see it moving higher in those tracking shares, does that mean that
Not really, because what we're valued at, because if you've got to look at GE over the past year, I mean, it's shot up. It's almost vertical. So you're seeing a lot of that spin-off is actually priced into the stock. So when it comes to the breakup, you're seeing a lot of the value being priced in already. So investors should be extremely aware of that and the fact that a lot of the value has been baked in. So we've got a fair value around Vernova around here and also around General Electric. So we don't believe there's much upside, even though the two of them are low debt, but great margin businesses.
Let's go to 3M spin of Solventum. I kind of get a mixed reaction from investors yesterday. We were just talking about it. You say there are 25 other spinoffs scheduled for this year. And you say to tell the good from the bad, you need to do some rigorous examination. What does that involve? What's the rigorous examination that investors should be doing?
Well, 3M is the total opposite of the end. You've had a very bad business. I mean, look at the stock price in 2021. It was double this. So they decided to spin off their health business, Solventum, but actually they've saddled it with a lot of debt. So why it's undervalued to its peers, and it's a good opportunity for investors on that basis, you're buying into a company which is higher very highly levered. So if the market does fall, these are the sort of companies that get hit quite hard. So that's something that investors should watch. But on the other hand, 3M, the parent company, have sold down their, or paid down their debt. They've got less leverage now. They're paying down their liabilities with all the litigation, and it could be a better company. So that's where we are in those two companies. So you really should, as an investor, look at each of these companies on an individual basis to see where they're going.
All right, Jim Osman, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate your time and your insight. You have a great day.
Thank you, Frank.
All right, we're going to hear more on the GE spinoff when CEO and Chairman Larry Culp and GE Vernova CEO Scott Strazik, they join CNBC exclusively at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time, right here on CNBC. Okay, it's time now for your global briefing. We're going to start in Japan. Japan's finance minister warning of action against excessive yen volatility. He stopped short of threatening to take decisive action against excessive moves, but it marks the latest comments by leaders there to prevent a destabilization fall in the currency. BYD shares jumping in March as it faced increasing competition from Chinese auto companies in the global EV market. The Buffett-backed company is selling more than 626,000 cars. That's up 13% from a year ago. And the U.S. and U.K. announcing a new partnership on AI safety. The two governments will focus on testing that involves using the same methods and underlying infrastructure. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we've got the one word that every investor needs to know today. Plus, with stocks facing another tough day ahead, the improving signals our next guest is seeing around her triangle of tension facing investors. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with Walt Disney gaining critical support in its proxy fight with Nelson Peltz ahead of tomorrow's shareholder meeting. A spokesperson for T. Rowe Price telling CNBC it will vote for Disney management, with BlackRock also reportedly planning to back the company. Bloomberg reporting that Citigroup has carried out a fresh round of job cuts, apparently slashing 430 positions focused in the bank's tech, media, and telecom units, among others. Shares of Trump Media and Technology Group, they're down again today after falling 21% yesterday. The parent company of Truth Social revealing it lost $58 million last year, more than in 2022, on just about $4 million in revenue. Shares of health insurers also getting hit after the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services finalized the 2025 rate announcement for Medicare Advantage and prescription drug coverage, leaving them unchanged from an earlier proposal. Rail operator CSX will begin a new dedicated freight rail service between Baltimore and New York for its clients today. The move is aiming to deal with trade disruptions following the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore last week. And Warner Brothers Discovery revealing two directors are leaving the board. The exits stem from a DOJ probe into potential antitrust violations. Here's what to watch today. We get factory orders and JOLTS figures out at 10 a.m. We're watching for earnings from Paychex, Calmian Foods, and Dave & Buster's, and a pair of Fed speeches today with Michelle Bowman and Mary Daly, both set to speak. Ahead of all that, let's take one more look at the futures this morning. As we mentioned all morning long, they've been in the red. Taking a look, we're looking at the Dow, looking like it would open about 155 points lower. Now joining us with the look at the trading day ahead is Katrina Dudley, investment strategist and portfolio manager for Franklin Mutual Advisors. Katrina, good morning. It's good to see you.
Great to see you.
All right, so we just saw right there, futures under quite a bit of pressure after a down day yesterday. How do you see today shaping up? What's your WEX word of the day?
Look, I think the word that we're choosing is Goldilocks. And I think that, you know, there are so many people out there who don't realize how well we've done this, you know, kind of triangle of tension, as we've talked about. And this triangle of tension is that need to balance inflation, GDP growth, and interest rates. And I think we've kind of got it just right. And you do have days like this where the market does sell off because people like to almost be the negative person in the room. But if you come to a party and you're waiting for it to be over, you're going to miss the fun in the interim. And in this case, you're going to miss a lot of returns because you're waiting for the market to go down.
All right. So you say if you're waiting for the party to be over or turn bad, you're going to miss out on something. What area would you be in right now if you don't want to miss the party?
Look, I think that there is another thing that we need to really talk about, and it just relates to trading this market during this year, because we're in a really unique year. We have a lot of political tension, not just in the United States, but globally. in the United States. However, going into an election, you have rising uncertainty, and with valuations where they are, you're likely to have, you know, that uncertainty lead to a sell-off. So in that situation in the U.S., you want to either avoid sectors which have very binary outcomes, and you want to go into sectors where it's good either way. And in that case, we're looking at the defense sector. Now, the reason that the defense sector hasn't been such a strong performer is because you've had that hold up in appropriations. But if we look at it, if we go through the election cycle, we have some level of resolution. We do think that the setup for defense is very strong going into next year. So it's one of those sectors that benefits regardless of who wins the White House.
All right, so that's the one sector that you believe benefits either way, but there's some other areas that you say are more sensitive. One of them is alternative energy.
Exactly. And what do we have there? We have a situation where, you know, Democrats have come out a lot in favor of alternative energy platforms, and you do have a risk if there is a change that those stocks are not fully pricing it in, particularly as we get closer and closer to the election outcome and people, that uncertainty gets more and more certain, you know, gets more and more close, I suppose, is the way to look at it. So we're not as bullish on those names, and we do see political risk. But look, I've also been a global investor my entire life, Frank, and, you know, one of the areas where I think in the United States we've been so focused on the fact that the economic outlook has been positive, in other parts of the world, we're just coming out of a recession. And there's some really good opportunities as well internationally.
All right. I want to go back to your triangle of tension thesis. Let's talk about traditional energy for a minute. Right now, we're looking at WTI, the U.S. benchmark, over 85 bucks a barrel right now, at about 85.30 a barrel. You mentioned you're a global investor. As we continue to see these oil prices rise, how does that impact your thesis about what sectors to invest in, not only here in the U.S., but globally?
Okay, if I take a look at the oil price outlook, I think, yes, it's very good for oil companies and those traditional oil companies, but they're still also needing to transition away off this kind of golden goose, which is being high oil prices. So those cash flows, they're returning to shareholders. That makes it a very attractive setup going into those types of names. In the rest of the world, I think that the high oil prices are not going to stall a recovery, because a lot of these companies have spent the last year trying to reduce their dependency on energy, be it oil or different types of energy. So I think the setups for corporate profits are good, and PMI numbers are supporting that.
There we go. Katrina Dudley, always great to see you. Thank you very much.
Great.
And before we let you all go, a programming note: beginning this Monday, Worldwide Exchange is heading over to London. I'll be there for the rest of April, bringing you your global markets coverage and top stories live from our newsroom there. It all starts this Monday at 5 a.m. Eastern. And one more look at the futures. We've been looking at the futures all morning long. As we mentioned, the Dow in the red, looking like it would open up about 160 points lower. The S&P and the NASDAQ negative as well. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.